Jake, can you, are you staying?
Yeah.
Come on up. Starting.
Give and take on this topic, very, very important topic. Before we begin discussing this topic, which is essential, I think, for anyone who's going to be in the real world, who's going to be interacting in society, it's very important to have a very confident, firm understanding of how we relate to the non-Jewish world. I'll tell you what I mean by confidence, and why it's important to be confident. Shouldn't need to feel apologetic, shouldn't need to feel that you're coming from a point of ethical weakness. I'll give you an example where I saw somebody who did this to an almost heroic proportion. Who has heard of Rabbi Chalap? Zvulun Chalap, former dean of NYU, dean emeritus, still very active, still doing about 100 push-ups a day, by the way. He's unbelievable guy. Close to 80. So I was once talking to him about a topic that, a particular issue that was troubling to me, which we can touch upon, but we'll see, which is the fact that there is an Ikar HaDin when it comes to Pikuach Nefesh that says that I could be Mechal Shabbos to save a Jew, but I can't be Mechal Shabbos to save an non-Jew. So that's a very significant topic to talk an entire shiur on. But that was what was bothering me at the time. And I, you know, even though halach l'maisa is you can, for sure, right? But it's through almost a loophole. It's through a need to say that it's going to be pikuach nefesh for Jews if we started adhering to that ikar hadin, and therefore mishum and eva of pikuach nefesh were allowed to. So that was bothering me, and I came into his office to sort of schmooze it out with him. So he said, let me tell you a story. So here was his story. He was the Rav HaMachshir for Pepsi Cola. He gives the hefshir for Pepsi. And Pepsi always had conventional sweetener, like some sugar derivative was a sweetener for the soda. And one year they decided they were going to change and switch to a grape extract as the sweetener. Why is that important? Does anyone know? What does that bring up in Hilchos Kashrus? Right? Now there was a need for a mashkiach possibly to make sure that we didn't run into any kind of problems in handling the grapes and the grape extract somewhere along the processing. So Rabbi Chalap, who had a very good relationship with the presidents and vice presidents of the company, you know, thought he would just kind of squeeze by without getting into any details about what this halacha is about. Right? Again, for those that don't know, the halacha is that stam yenem means that you're not supposed to drink wine that was touched, manufactured by non-Jews. So it's a kind of delicate halacha. It has its reasons that we'll get into, but it's a very delicate halacha to speak to non-Jews about. So, but he thought if you didn't talk about the reason, you could sort of get by with just instituting the new regulations for that hefshir. So what happens? He gets a phone call that says, Rabbi Chalap, in a Texas, I wish I could do it well, real Texas accent, hired up, you know, however they would say it, right? We would like to see you for an emergency meeting at headquarters, which was somewhere in Texas. I don't know exactly where Pepsi's headquarters are. But here was Rabbi Chalap, he was fairly young at the time, called in, and he had no idea what it was about at the time they called. He goes by himself. And he's standing there in like just the position I'm in now with this gigantic table, this is the way he described it, 48 vice presidents of Pepsi-Cola, big hush of a people, right? Half of them with their cowboy hats and their boots, the whole deal. And he comes in there and there's a chair that's placed around the big table for him to sit in. And he's thinking, okay, they want me to explain that there's this halacha about Stamina and why I'm making such a big deal about it. It's going to incur expense to the company. It's not a pashut thing. He says, all right, so I'll just say, you know, I won't get into the details. Before he has a chance to explain it on his terms, one of the guys gets up, and this was pre-art scroll. Back then, what did we use when we needed an English translation? Sansino, right? So one of the guys gets a Sansino Gemara, which is an English translated Gemara, holds it up like this, and says, Rabbi Chala, you mean to tell me, and he quotes the Gemara that says, if a fly falls into your wine, what's the din? You take it out and you drink your wine. So he goes, if a fly falls into your wine cup, you just take it out and you drink it, but if I put my little pinky, and then he goes on the cup, my little pinky, right, into your cup, it's not kosher? Can you explain that to us, Rabbi Chala? So, whoa, you know, that's a pretty intense moment, right? Here you have all these Texas, very serious business people confronting this little young rabbi. And at the time, he was fairly young. He was much younger than he is now. And I'm saying, my God, that's much worse than what I'm going through, right? I was having my own problem in the hospital relating to that other issue, but I only had like 5 people confronting me. He has 48 people seriously confronting him. So he handled it well. He thought like this, and this really does relate to the ultimate answer to even my question. He said the following. He said, gentlemen, I'm sure, are all familiar with communion, right? Who here is familiar with communion? Who knows what communion is? Communion is it's a Christian ceremony that involves, right? It involves the priest giving over to the different people that come up to him a wafer and a drink of some wine. I don't know if grape juice is kosher for it. I really don't know. But some one of those that is supposed to be the body and the blood and all those kind of symbolic meanings, right? So Rabbi Chala, very quick on his feet, realized that the rule there is it can only be offered by a believer. If you're a believer, you could do that. So that they connected to, and they let him go. Because they said, oh, it's something like that. Now we got it. No problem, Rabbi Chala. How do you do it? And the whole thing was settled. So it's an interesting idea that people that, if within their own system, in their own belief system, something makes sense and something has application, then they get more comfortable and they don't necessarily look at it in a prejudicial way. We're going to come back to this is the most sensitive area of our topic. And what I'm hoping to do is leave time at the end for questions because and possibilities that you confront for which we hopefully will be able to provide answers. But what my agenda is with this handout is I want to give you what I consider the absolute emistic approach, objective emistic approach of the Torah and Chazal towards our relationships with non-Jews and the way non-Jews are depicted honestly by Chazal. And I'm going to not try to fool anyone. So that's why I want to absolutely encourage everybody at the end or during, if you have a question, if you know something that you think is disturbing, this is a great time to bring it to the front. So let's start with the following. On top is what's going to set the pace and set the tone for the entire discussion. Very, very famous statement of Rabbi Akiva, V'ahavta l're'echa kamocha. What is re'echa? Whenever you see re'echa in Chumash and brought down in the Gemara, it's always a catchphrase, it's a hint towards what? What's re'echa mean? Re'echa means your friend, right? Reus, someone you're friendly with, right? Or achicha, these are code words for something. Re'echa, achicha, what's the Torah referring to? A halacha that relates to another Jew. Right? As soon as you see those words, that's a Jew. A Jew is someone you're raised with, achdu with, right? Those are definitely Jewish words. So it says, Ve'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, zeklal gadol b'Torah. So Rabbi Akiva is very famous for saying that loving your fellow Jew, that's a klal gadol b'Torah. Comes along Ben Azza, in the very next line, Ze sefer todos Adam, b'yom b'ro Elokim Adam, b'dmus Elokim asalso, Ze klal gadol mizeh. Ben Azza says, I got a better one. My klal's better. After Ye'echa Kamocha, that's very nice. But I got a better one. It's called Ze sefer todos Adam. Why is that one better? So this comes from the Yerushalmi. There's a parish of Yerushalmi called the Korban Eidah. It's right on the Daf. It's like the Rashi and the Tosfos of the Yerushalmi. He says, you want to know why Ben Azza is better? Because Rabbi Akiva's was limited to Re'echa. Rabbi Akiva's klal was only about loving Jews. But Ben Azai is incorporating everyone. It's a universalist approach. And that, I'm going to maintain very confidently, is the real approach of Torah and Chazal. The one who expresses this most often and most beautifully is Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks. It's one of his most favorite yesodos, is to say, is that one thing that sets Judaism apart from every other religion is all the religions believe that they are universalistic, but only Judaism is universalistic and pluralistic. Meaning, I don't want to go too much into how he proves this point, but it's going to be fairly obvious once we go through some of these makaros. The point is that, you know, every religion thinks theirs is the correct one for the world. Right? That's, in that sense, we're all universalist. But for a Muslim, you're only going to be redeemed and go to their version of heaven, and you're only a true good person if you're a Muslim. And to a Christian, the same thing. The only path of redemption for both those religions is through their religion. If you just believe, you'll make it in Christianity, and if you become a Muslim, you'll make it in Islam. But in Judaism, it's absolutely not true. In Judaism, we believe that our Torah is the Torah that's applicable to the entire universe. However, to become somebody who's chayav in Taryag Mitzvos is only necessary for someone who's born a Jew. If you're not born a Jew, you can become a great person, make it to Olam Haba, as I will show you, the Makoros very clearly, just through your religion. Zion Mitzvah's Bnei Noach. That's what you need to do. You could be a very good Christian and follow Zion Mitzvah's Bnei Noach, and you're going to be a tzaddik, with such terminology, and I'll show you it. And you could be a great Muslim too. Just follow Zion Mitzvah's Bnei Noach, and you're good. We don't want you to convert, we don't need you to convert. What we need you to be is a good person. If you're an ethical, good person who believes in God, then you're okay in our book. That's a very unique feature to Yadus. And that's really the ultimate message of the first two Makaros. Comes along, just so we realize that Rabbi Akiva didn't disagree with Ben Azai. So look at the next one. This is from Pirkei Avos. Hu haya omer, it's referring to Rabbi Akiva. Chaviv Adam shenivra b'tzelem. Chiva yisera no daslo shenivra b'tzelem. Of course, Rabbi Akiva agrees also. There's not a machlokas. Rabbi Akiva says, we only have to love Jews and they're the only good people. No. Everybody understands the concept of Tzelem Elokim. Why is this true? We'll see very shortly. The Pirkei Avos then mentions one other thing that we need to bear in mind at the same time. Chaviv in Yisrael shenikru vanim namakom. Here is now the paradox. There's going to be a paradox that we're going to see from beginning to end within the thrust and emphasis of Chazal and the Torah. And that paradox is that while we are very openly pluralistic and universalistic in the Rabbi Jonathan Sacks sense, at the same time, there's an absolute other emes. And that is that we are the Am HaNivchar. We are Am Segula. And that will be as absolutely certain as we are in our tolerance and our universalistic approach. So now, you need to really understand exactly how we operate within these two seemingly contradictory, although not necessarily at all, principles. That on the one hand, we love everybody, we think everybody could be great, but we're something special about us, something nifchar about us. So, Rav Soloveitchik really got the conversation started when he points out that this sort of dichotomy, this dual role, this dual approach, starts with the very first Jew. It starts with Avraham Avinu when he says, Ger v'soshav anochi imachem. Right? What does that mean, Ger v'toshav anochi imachem? Who can translate those words? Ger v'toshav, it's in the handout, if you want to cheat. Ger v'toshav, Ger means?
Strange.
Toshav means resident. Those are seemingly contradictory. Avraham, right away, we're revealed the way Avraham is the prototypical Jew living in a non-Jewish environment. And what does a Jew in a non-Jewish environment have to realize? That he is constantly a ger v'toshav. And the way the Rav puts it is very beautiful. He puts it like this. Avraham's definition of his dual status, we believe, describes with profound accuracy the historical position of the Jew who resides in a predominantly non-Jewish society. He was a resident, like other inhabitants of Canaan, sharing with them a concern for the welfare of society, digging wells, contributing to the progress of the country, in loyalty to his government and institutions. Here, Avraham is clearly a fellow citizen, a patriot among compatriots, joining others in advancing the common welfare. However, there was another aspect that's equally true, the spiritual, in which Avraham regarded himself as a stranger. His identification and solidarity with his fellow citizens in the secular realm did not imply his readiness to relinquish any aspects of his religious uniqueness. He was a different faith, and there was nothing that was going to change it. Right? And this is one of the rubs, pet peeves, if you can use that expression, by Rav Soloveitchik. One of the things that the Rav was so adamant about was Jewish pride. And he said, no matter how seemingly we're going to be wanting to participate and contribute to general society, a Jew must always do it with a sense of incredible pride in his true heritage. And he goes on, and it's not in the handout, but in this essay, he goes on very, very strongly and concretely to criticize a Jew who thinks the avenue of assimilation, or the derech of assimilation, is the way to satisfy his participation in general society. It's not that. One has to be a ger ve'atoshav at the same time. You have to be a contributor, right? And if you look on page 2, is further details on exactly what is meant by being a contributor. Any common cause, non-spiritual issue that is facing society is something Jews should actively participate in with everybody else in order to make things better. And that's a given. But at the same time, he says the Jew has another identity, which he does not share with the rest of mankind. He has a bris with Hashem at Har Sinai, established over 3,000 years ago. All of Jewish history only makes sense in terms of the validity of this bris, which entrusted the Jewish people of all generations with a particular national destiny and a distinctive religious heritage. The identity involves responsibilities, right? Mitzvos and achrayos that are going to be very unique and special for a Jew, and a way of life which is uniquely Jewish and which inevitably set the Jew apart from the non-Jews. So this is going to be the constant tension that we're going to be dealing with through everything we look at today. We're going to look a little bit at the Avos, but once we move out of the Avos, we're going to look at the Halacha, and you're going to see the Halacha manifests itself exactly within this very same tension. If you take a look, this is a very nice piece from M.S. Yaakov, or Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zatzal, where he develops the same idea, basically, right? Just so we don't think this is like a YU thing or something like that. This is a very accepted idea from the Psukim in Bereishis. Everyone knows the story. What does Yaakov send? What's the first message that Yaakov sends to Esav when he's going to be meeting with him? Im lavan garti, right? Im lavan garti. That's what he says, right? What does that mean? I was living with love. So what's the obvious question? Big deal. Why are you telling me that, Esav's wondering? So what is Rashi? Very famous Rashi. World famous Rashi. Im lavan garti, bes taryag mitzvot shamarti. Right? So what does that mean? He's bothered. Rashi's clearly bothered by what's the point of telling Esav, im lavan garti? So shkayach, you know, what about the rest of it? You got anything else to tell me? What do you mean, im lavan garti? So he says, the point he's making is, and then Rashi, originally, attributes more words to Yaakov's statement than we have any clue from any other source. So that's where Yaakov Kamenetsky's question. How did Rashi know that the follow-up to Im Lavan Garti was the Eskariot Mitzvah Shamar? What does one thing have to do? Where did he get it from? So he says, well, if you look, and I'll say this outside, but it's all there inside in this piece, Rav Yaakov explains that the point was like this. Especially, he says, in a time before many of the Gzeiros HaTakanos that we're about to talk about. There are many Gzeiros HaTakanos that are made by Chazal whose specific purpose is to distance a Jew from the non-Jewish world. Is to keep us separate. Things like Stam Yenam. Stam Yenam, one of the understandings of it, right? One is that it has to do something with Ovinogo Bazara. But why does it apply today, even just as strongly? Because it has other value, right? Chasmus, which means it's to distance ourselves. If we get into that jovial interaction, it can lead to interactions that are going over the line, right? So at the time of Yaakov, there was no gzeros like Stanyen. There weren't these type of takanos that we'll see in a moment. So Rav Yaakov says he was, and this is a family. He's with Lavan, family. So he wants Esav to realize something. Even though I was with my family in this very familiar surroundings and this very familiar environment where things could get out of hand, I stayed separate. Vayivater Yaakov levado. That's the pasuk where Rav Yaakov's whole parish comes off of, because it's telling him that I was able to keep my distance. How? Because of Tariyat Mitzvah Shemarta. Because so it is, the ultimate way a Jew navigates interacting in the general society is by keeping mitzvahs. The mitzvahs are the shmir. And it's a very, very significant and important yisod to remember. Whatever you're doing, there's so many practical applications to this. To me, I very much interact in the non-Jewish world. You know, especially before I came to Eretz Yisrael. I was on a daily basis in the non-Jewish world. But I kept myself with my borders and lines drawn because I was very careful to not at all flinch on Tariyag Mitzvos. If you keep the Mitzvos absolutely, then you're in a protective cocoon. Despite the fact that I want to maximally be involved. It's a very challenging sort of tension to live with. But if you're strong enough, then I would say it's, to some degree, a possible ideal. It's not an ideal for everyone. Some people take the tactic that the fear of losing the Amah Nivchar status, the fear of losing the uniqueness, is so great that you have to sort of isolate. That is an approach that is completely valid. I would never argue with it. But I think that this approach is equally valid, which is to get involved and do the achrayas that comes upon everybody since you are a toshav as well, and yet maintain your ger status. Keep mitzvot very solidly. Keep yichud very solidly. And keep all the other gedarim that we'll be discussing. Now, just as a side point, Yaakov Kamenetsky throws in something else. He says on the pasuk that said "Vayivater Yaakov levado vayiga bekaf yerechu," that Yaakov was left alone, and then suddenly Esav's malach came in and attacked. So what's that about? So Yaakov Kamenetsky points out because it was dafka when he was alone, he thought he was going to be susceptible to the attack. He made a mistake because Yaakov was pretty good on his own. But he says, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky comments, but his future progeny might not be so lucky. And the second ingredient, aside from Tariyag Mitzvot, that will be absolutely critical in maintaining a Jewish posture in a totally secular environment, would be Achdus. And he says, why is it that there was the injury, the Gid HaNasha Halacha? Where does that come from? So Yaakov Kamenetsky has an interesting understanding of this. Hainu Shiyotze Chalatzav, the descendants of Yaakov, Ein behem oso koach. They won't have the koach to withstand the Esavs by themselves alone. Ubiyosh she'ein ha'achtus ha'gemura beinehem. The kol echad tzarech la'ezer chadero. It's going to be only if there is achtus and camaraderie between Jews that they will be able to deal optimally with the non-Jewish world. And we're going to be seeing something very, very significant in that regard very soon. So I want to just summarize using page 3. There is no doubt in my mind that Chazal's attitude towards, and the Torah's attitude towards the non-Jewish world, if I had to capture it in a few words, is very, very positive. There is, on this page, the basic makoros that point out that the Gemara in Bava Kama, for example, says that if a non-Jew does his mitzvos, the late shalem and kavana that's appropriate, he could be as great as the Kohen Gadol. It's the Farish Disgemara on the top of page 3. And then Tana de Bei Rabbi Eliyahu says similarly, Bein Goy, Bein Yisrael, Bein Ish, Bein Isha, Bein Eved, Bein Shifka, Hakol Lefi Maisa Sha'oseh. What are we judged on? It makes so much sense. It's Pashut. shouldn't even need to say this. At the end of the day, the Torah's attitude is, whoever you are, Jew or non-Jew, you will be judged on how you behave and on what you do. It's a double portion. Halavai that all the religions of the world should acquire that understanding. Finally, I just wanted you to see from Rav Hirsch, before we get into the controversy comes next, right? I wanted to just set the tone for what the reality is. Rav Hirsch gives us one more inkling into what the reality is. He says, and this is based largely on a very famous Rambam, he says, we should view the other religions, Islam and Christianities, as fantastic conduits to the ultimate mission of Klal Yisrael, which is to educate the entire world about real ethical monotheism. And they're doing that, and therefore that alone should gain or garner our respect for them. That's Rav Shimshon Voronezh. Now, having said all this, so I'm painting an incredibly rosy, rosy picture of the attitude of Chazal towards the non-Jewish world. But a lot of people know there are certain halachos, and if you deal with non-Jews that are educated, especially nowadays, all they got to do is Google Jew, and immediately you will get tons of anti-Semitic literature. And of the favorites of the anti-Semites are the following issues. So, in almost a Dama Mahashi, you should be aware of the MS of these halachos, because they're misrepresented, distorted in a way that causes a lot of harm to Jewish people. The first one is the din of Hashavas Avedim. There are several monetary halachos that seem unfair. They seem to overtly favor Jews over non-Jews. So let's start with Hashavas Avedim. What is the din by Hashavas Avedim? If a Jew loses an object, what's my chiyuv?
Return.
What about a non-Jew? Does that sound fair? Is that fair? Okay. What's the din of Onah?
Anyone know what the din of Onah is? The din of Onah?
Onah. Overcharge. Are you allowed to overcharge a Jew? No. What happens if you do? Let's say you do more than a sixth overcharge. Mecca tells you have to return. What about a non-Jew? You don't have. Fair? Seemingly not. What's the other biggie of the big three? Ribbis. Interest. Are you allowed to charge a Jew interest? How bad is it to charge a Jew interest? If you look into the... Anyone in Halavai, you should be learning within the next 2 years the Ezer Neshef, the fifth parak of Bava Metzia, right? It's one of the hardest program around, the Chas, right? Halavai, you should all be zochah to be able to do it, right? It's unbelievable how severe an Avera Ribbis is. Ribbis is incredible. Multi layers of lava. But am I allowed to charge a non-Jew Ribbis? Of course. So what's going on? What happened to our universalistic, pluralistic love of our fellow people? Kulam b'tzelem elokim. So the truth of the matter is, if a person's objective in assessing these three halachos, he realizes that they're completely fair. They're 100% fair. And I'll go through each one of them and I'll tell you how they, I think, are properly objectively analyzed. We'll start with Hashavas Avedim. And this, I gave you a section from Rabbi Michael Broy. Anyone familiar with him? Right? Big Gaon, Michael Broy. Right? He's a Dayan. He's very, very much brilliant in all areas of Shulchan Aruch. So he was analyzing this issue. And he said, if the law was any other way, it would be completely unethical. Right? The way we just described it, that Hashavas Avedim applies to Jews, but not to non-Jews. If it was any other way, then it would be unethical. Why is that? What does the word reciprocal mean? Who can define that word? Not a Hebrew word, English word. Right? Reciprocal. Reciprocity. What does reciprocity mean? It goes both ways. So Michael Broyd explains very, very accurately that a halacha like Hashavas Avedim demands that it be in a context of reciprocity, which means like this. What's the general rule in society about finders? Finders, keepers, losers, weepers, unfortunately for them, right? But what is the accepted ethical norm when it comes to finding the lost object? Finders, keepers. That is the way it is. There's no law in any government that says, oh, if you find something, you will be arrested if you don't return it. Is there? It happens all the time. Right? Of course, there was a big Kiddush Hashem last year. Right? Everyone aware of what happened? This guy, who was in Colwell, somewhere in Eretz Yisrael or in Baltimore, very not well-off person, found in furniture that he had bought, like $10,000, $15,000, more. I think it was like $90,000, an incredibly large sum of cash that absolutely no one would ever know that he got it. He was, now, Rove people are not Jewish. He, Alpi Din, was certainly able to hold on to it, and Alpi American law, he was also able to hold on to it. But he did a tremendous Kiddush Hashem, and it was all over the news. I was very, very happy to see it. He returned it. That was going to Fimi Shuras HaDin, which we're going to talk about in a few moments. But the din is that, or the American norm, or the secular norm, is you don't need to return things. So, why is it that we have this din of Hashavas HaVeda? Because it's going to be one of several dinim whose objective is to create a special feeling of achdus amongst Jews. That's its ultimate objective. You'll see how this works out. And therefore, it requires reciprocity. It means, I will be mentioned your Aveda if you will be mentioned mine. But if you're not, then I don't have to. And that's the only reason that non-Jews are left out. What would be the proof that this is just not made up apologetics? Well, how could I prove Alpi Din that I'm not making this up? Let's say I had a Jew who just gave up on Torah and didn't adhere to the halacha. What should be the halacha by him? I don't have to return it. And that is the halacha. That's what I want you to see. In the Sefer Yireim, which appears right below Rabbi Broid's piece, the Sefer Yireim says that if you have somebody who himself is not adhering to Torah, then there is no need to be mentioned as a Veda. It doesn't matter if he's a Jew or non-Jew. There is no greater absolute proof that this is not a bias, a prejudicial halacha. It's a halacha that's rooted in a certain agenda of the Torah to create a special, special relationship amongst Jews, to create achdus. And just since we're by the site of Rabbi Olshan, we must be running out of time, I am going to quickly summarize that by Onah and Rivis, it's basically the same thing, but even in a stronger conviction. I brought you on page 5 the Maharal, emphasizing this Yisod. But I want to, it's even more elaborate by Rivis. Rivis is amazing halacha. Who thinks that charging interests objectively, if we can take our Jewish hats off for a moment, just for a moment, right, is unethical? Is charging interests unethical? Or normal? Business? How do you think the secular world looks at it? It's normal. It's absolute good business. Of course you charge interest. What are we doing, charity? If every business person was pure charity, no one would be making too much money. Life would, the economic reality would be very, very scary. It's business. It's normal. So what's the din in the Torah? Why is it such a severe halacha? So the way that the Maharal and Rabbi Yeshua Hartman explain it is so beautiful. They say like this. It says in the Torah, in Kesef Tilbe Es Amid, if, im means if, what else does im mean? When. When you lend money. What does that mean? You are chayiv to lend money. A Jew must lend money to another Jew. Why? It's the greatest expression of ahava ba'ahava there is. Why is that? What's the highest level of tzedakah? Right? Get somebody a job, put them on their feet, let them maintain their dignity. When you lend someone money, that's a great way of doing chesed, but having them maintain their dignity. Because it's not a handout. Oh, you'll pay me back. I know you will. But what would be the way to damage that entire beautiful interaction? If you show that it's tainted by the reason you're lending that money is to make money, to charge interest. It's completely defeating the whole objective in Halva. Halva is an avenue for Jews to learn to love each other, to learn to care about each other. You throw in Rivis and you've destroyed it. That has no application to Gabi the non-Jewish world. There is an agenda for the Am HaNivchar to be a cohesive, group, a segula group that has a mission that Hashem has given them, but by which they must be separate and stand alone. They need to be ba'achdus. Halavai, we should achieve it. These halachas are all geared towards that. They are all otherwise going well above and beyond the normal societal expectations. In that sense, I think anyone who's seriously objective and not just a blogging anti-Semite will understand that these things are actually quite ethical as they are. And quickly, if you look on page 6, is the Rav explaining the concept of the ultimate goal of creating this Jewish Knesset Yisrael, which is a very cohesive entity. It's an ontological entity. That means that it is above and beyond the sum of its parts. It's a special entity that we should all be able to create together. And I'll end with this, since we really ran out of time, and I would like to try to get some questions in on the harder issues. The last 3 pages are bringing in to explain the Talmud. Ultimately, a Jew is supposed to be Or LaGoyim. That's that other agenda, right? We're supposed to be having a special relationship with Hashem, just the Jewish people, but at the same time, we're supposed to be involved, interacting, and we're supposed to even be an Or LaGoyim. So if the Taryag Mitzvos, such a paradox, if the Taryag Mitzvos are the Shmirah, keep you separate, how on earth could they be an Or LaGoyim? Everyone hear the question? It's counterintuitive. Following Taryag Mitzvos will keep me separate. And yet, I'm supposed to use those as an Or LaGoyim. How on earth can it be? So, the answer is that the Taryag Mitzvos are supposed to transform a Jew. The Taryag Mitzvos are supposed to not just be an end in themselves. Taryag Mitzvos are rules. They're rules and they have very special meanings. And they create a special relationship between a Jew and a Kadosh Baruch. But they're also supposed to change the person. This is what we were talking about yesterday in that slide presentation, right? Taryag mitzvahs, doing the mitzvahs, are supposed to affect internal change to you as a person. Your personality is supposed to get better. You're supposed to become a more ethical, giving person of your own will. That's called lifnei mishura sadin, as the Ramban and the Rambam present on page 7. Comes along on page 9, Rav Kook. Rav Kook is an amazing chiddush. He says, Taryag mitzvahs never was meant to be the Or LaGoyim. It's not through Taryag Mitzvahs directly. It's through the accomplishment of every Jew of internalizing Taryag Mitzvahs and creating much more ethical, free will personalities. That is what's going to be the Or LaGoyim. That's what the Goyim need to see and be affected by. And he expresses it very beautifully. He says that in truth, it is the very fact that the people of Israel reached through the Torah's guidance, a moral way of life, out of a free inner awareness that will cause many nations to marvel and will inspire them to ascend to Har Hashem. And I'll just end with this. It says in Pirkei Avos, it says we should be like the Talmidei Aaron HaKohen. Right? What comes next? What was special about Aaron HaKohen? What do you have? Oev Shalom, Rodev Shalom, Oev Sabrios, U'mekarvin L'Torah. What does that mean, Oev Sabrios? Who are the Brios? All the Umos Olam, everybody. So what does it mean to Makarvin the Torah? Isn't it usher, by the way, it is usher to teach a non-Jew Torah? Right? You're not allowed to teach a non-Jew Torah. It's really that's an avera. It needs to be explained. But here we have Aaron telling me, oh, is a brios from Makarvin the Torah. Is he telling me to do an avera? No, what does it mean to be Makarvin the Torah? It means if you're a good Jew and you're out there in the world interacting and represent Torah properly, display all the greatness, the ethics, the morality of Torah, that will be makarei of the non-Jewish world to Torah, and they will love it, and through it they will love Hashem, and ultimately should bring the Nos HaMashiach from here and there. Any questions? Or no time?